very sad news last night. I was programming late at night. My wife got up. She said, "What are you doing? You're programming again? You've got to make a choice here, sweetie. It's programming or me. Programming or me." I said, "Don't you mean programming X or me?" Hey, howdy, howdy, ho. Daniel Markham here. Nerd Roundup. It's Friday. I'm recording this on Thursday, but you're probably seeing this on Friday or later. What is Nerd Roundup? Why am I here? Why are you listening? What is the meaning of life? Some of these questions I'll answer, some I will not. Nerd Roundup is every week I get together with friends, sometimes by myself. I think today I will be by myself. And I talk about cool nerd news of the past week. The emphasis is on having fun, joking around. There's nothing serious going on. I hope to do a lot of technical stuff, a lot of technical detail, but nothing in depth. I do not promise to make your hair grow or your penis larger or your breasts bigger. I'm very sorry, but none of this will happen, or at least won't happen based on what you're hearing here. I hope not. If it does, please write me a letter. I could be on a new internet business. But really, all you're here to do is hear some cool tech stuff. Normally, I have a bunch of folks come by. James Gurning, John Kern, Uncle Bob, Scott Ambler said he wanted to come by. Mark Danziger's been here before. But today, it's my own by myself. So what I do is put together a series of links and just show you guys the articles and tell you why I think they're interesting. And usually when we do things by myself, it runs a lot quicker. So let's see what we got. Before I start, I wanted to show you where I got here. No, not that. This. Hopefully next week, James and I can... I think James will be here next week. Last week, we were talking about FFmpeg, this cool little Linux utility. It runs in other platforms as well that does audio-video processing. I continue to, and I wrote this script based on this, I continue to find a bunch of crap I used to pay for on Windows is actually using free stuff available mostly for Linux that they've either recompiled or somehow kind of sucked into their own stuff and sold it to me. And that makes me very sad. So it was cool to sort of play around with FFmpeg some more. That dang thing will do about anything. You make slideshows, you can make convert things from movies to animated GIFs to movies to pictures, pictures to movies. It is really, really cool. Look forward to talking about that next week. What kind of links do we have this week? Well, the first one is not a fun link. I try to do fun stuff, but this one, I have to bring it up because it seems to impact the work we do. The cryptocurrency surveillance provision buried in the infrastructure bill is a disaster for digital privacy. This is the headline of an article by the Electronic Frontier Foundation, a group that tries to keep the internet and computing as free as possible. And I also read two other essays that said that those dang crypto people are trying not to, you know, to make bunches of money and get away with it. So Congress is trying to prevent us nerds from making millions of dollars using cryptocurrency and then not reporting it back to the Congress. These are for folks in the United States. If you didn't know this about the United States, we are one of just a very small number of countries that have decided that we can tax your ass anywhere in the world. You know, if Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, found out he actually owes taxes to the United States because he was born when his parents were visiting here, which made him a part U.S. citizen. It also meant he was had violated tax rules for many, many years. We just seem to decide on our own because we're just the United States. We can just do anything we want to by legislative fiat. And so they've become worried that nerds like us are making billions of dollars. I know I almost fell off my yacht when I read this. So they got a 2,000-page bill, which in itself is a problem. And if you read through here, it basically says if you're a broker responsible for and regularly providing any service that involves a transfer of digital assets. Okay, so a service that involves the transfer of digital assets, if you don't realize how vaguely that's worded, you know, if I send you a JPEG when you push a button, I'm transferring a digital asset. You know, I think that what we're doing in a lot of cases, including sort of a lot of this terrorism stuff, is that we seem to be so afraid of something that doesn't exist that we're creating the very thing that we're afraid of by overreacting to our own fear. This is just a sad situation. I'm not concerned from a cryptocurrency aspect of this. The crypto guys, if you own digital assets, NFTs, do whatever you've been doing. I'm hoping and assuming you're following the law and reporting your sales. But I'm quite concerned for us poor little schmucks who have nothing to do with any of this stuff, who are getting caught up in this. And for those of you who say, well, no, actually we're after the rich folks. And might I remind you of all the bots we have now on YouTube that go through and try to find DRM content so that they can automatically have your stuff delisted from YouTube. I used to run this podcast on YouTube, and I stopped. And the reason I stopped was I had 10 seconds of a drum solo from 1948 to start off this thing. Nobody even heard of these people. Nobody heard of the solo. I thought, hey, it sounded pretty cool. And if anybody asks, I can actually point them back to this artist and the drum solo, and it would be cool. It would be even more cool for my nerd friends. And so I play these 8 seconds of drum solo at the beginning, and I would get constant reminders from little computer programs on YouTube that said, no, you're lifting some DRM material, and we're not going to monetize your video. Of course, YouTube will continue to make money up, but I can't because I played some obscure little packet of sound. It's fucked up. I sent an email back saying, guys, there's a de minimis exemption for DRM that, 8 seconds, nobody can recognize what it is. It's not copyright infringement. But you know what? The little robots at Google do not care about my argument. And so this type of total bullshit is coming your way if you move little files around. The military has reached a point where they have a judge advocate group. They've had one for some time. But they've reached a point where they can almost not take any action at all without consulting lawyers to determine whether or not they're breaking war crimes or their own rules or congressional laws or UCMJ. It's gotten so nobody knows what the law is anymore. Might I remind you of the old maxim, if everything is illegal, there are no laws at all. Basically, it's just enforcement. So selective enforcement just pretty much picks who they don't like and they throw your ass in jail. Everybody else is good because everybody's breaking the law. So this is very, very bad. It's still being debated in Congress, and I'm hoping this will get fixed. I am not optimistic, however. For those of you who have been paying attention, digital currency, cryptocurrency, NFTs have got a lot of hype. I saw a tweet yesterday, should I buy a house or a picture of a frog? And I'm not really sure that was a joke. It was kind of joking, but not really, because you can buy digital pictures, which are just expensive as houses. So, yeah, Congress is, because this has gotten a lot of hype, because there are billionaires now, because of cryptocurrency, the legislators have decided that they're going to fix this for us, and we're going to all get fixed real and good, whether we need to or not. This is like when your brother got into the mud and you had to have a bath because of it. So let's hope it works out okay. I didn't even have a brother. That's how bad that was. Next up, and you gotta love a article that starts off like this. The headline is, thymic stromal lymphoprotein induces adipose loss through sebum hypersection. It's easy for me to say, huh? This is, I actually saw this when it was on in the theaters. They took the whole movie just to read the thing. So this breaks a lot of the rules I have personally about reading and sharing articles, but I'm doing it anyway because it is fun. One rule I have is I don't do like these medical stories, the grow hair, make your nose smaller, studies show that, scientists teach mice how to fly, They doubt it will happen in humans. So these things come out about every week. The scientists are doing some things that actually will never apply to us, but yet the hint is that maybe it would. And of course, we all know these are press releases put out by universities and research teams that reporters pick up and then do their best to sort of amplify whatever they think is newsworthy. So basically, science reporting is all shit, and we've known this for some time. So I try to do those stories. And while I'm on that topic, solar panel and battery guys, looking at you. All right, so this is, if I had as many cool batteries as I've been promised, you know, I would be like, hey, I'd be Iron Man now. But that did not happen. This story, as I understand it, is about some scientists that were doing some stuff with cytokines. Cytokines, I have the Wikipedia here up here. We've heard quite a bit about cytokines over the last year or two. And maybe they're cytokines. Apologize if I got that wrong. Cytokines are small proteins that cannot penetrate the cell wall, I guess. And what happens in COVID, for instance, is something called a cytokine storm. Your immune system responds to the COVID inflammation and releases all these cytokines, and you actually die from your own response to COVID, not COVID itself. So the scientists were doing some stuff with cytokines or cytokines, and they they were doing some cells with the thymic stromal lymphopoietin, yes, TSLP. It's a cytokine that's expressed at various sites, just the skin, lung, and gut. So it's because it's been shown to activate type 2 immune cells, they thought it would be able to counteract obesity. So they gave these cytokines to mice, fat mice. I don't know how you make a mouse fat. I guess you just keep feeding them, like give them some pot, have them a bunch of Fritos or something. But they gave it to some mice that were really fat. Within a month, the mice lost half of their fat. And you would think, okay, this is just yet another lose weight while you sleep thing, but this is freaking awesome because what they did was the fat was converted directly to their skin. So they just exuded the fat from inside themselves. They became very slippery and their fur became slick. So, you know, extrapolating this to people, you know, I'm, I guess, about 40 pounds overweight. I take one of these, some of these pills, and within a month, 20 pounds of fat gushes out of my skin. Which might not be such a bad thing, actually. If you lose 20 pounds in a month, you would be tough to catch if you're running from people. You would also be really good, like, in cold weather. You'd have this sort of sheen. Swimming would be good. So I have no idea if this is ever going to... I seriously, it's like most stories. I doubt it's going to go anywhere. But they did not expect for these mice to lose half their fat. They did not expect for it to just be secreted directly through the skin. This is just amazing. Yeah. You got a direct activation of the T cell receptor. It was not associated with decreased food intake. Yeah, it was associated with notable greasy hair appearance. So this is a lose weight why you become a grease monster, which I think they're going to have to work on the sales pitch this a little bit for late night TV. Cool stuff. I really hope they go somewhere with this because we're overweight. Obesity is a problem for all of us. Okay, so this is also something I don't normally do, but it's also quite interesting. this is a story from Real Clear History, and the title is Why Rudolf Hess Was the Last Casualty of World War II. So I'm a history nut, been a history nut for a long, long time. World War II, of course, the Allies fought the Axis powers. The number two guy in Germany was named Rudolf Hess, right underneath Adolf Hitler. He trusted him. The guy was named to be the successor if something ever happened to Hitler. He was a good Nazi. I mean, there was nothing ever said about Hess when he was in Germany. But something really, really weird happened that we're still teasing apart, and that is Hess, who could fly planes, got into a plane and flew in the war, in the middle of the war, flew to England. Landed in northern England and said, hey, I'm here to try to end the war. That much we know. He was picked up by British authorities, put in prison. They put a gag order on everything. We don't know what terms he offered. We don't know a lot. They won't tell us much. This was early in the war before the U.S. joined. It's weird because this was a really bad time to be ending the war for England because England... was kind of the spot where they really had to go into the war. They were in the war, and they needed the U.S. to join. They were ending the war at this point would have left Germany in charge of Europe. So England's in a spot where they could not have peace at any terms. Yet they could not admit that they could not have peace because they didn't really want to be overtaken or surrounded. They really wanted the Americans to join. So they just threw this guy in prison for like 45 years. That's correct. And that the 80s and 90s, this guy, the other Nazis, like a dozen of them were hung. Rustin went to jail for 4 or 5 years for murdering thousands of people. This Hess dude, who is the number two guy who came to try to surrender or somehow sue for peace, he got the worst punishment of everybody except for the dozen or so they hanged. We don't know what he had to say. And at some point, 45 years or so, he had suicide committed upon him. They said he actually hung himself in his cell. Medical professors who looked at him said, well, you know, it would make more sense if he hung himself if the rope marks had been such that they pulled upward on his neck, but the rope marks are actually pulled backwards as if somebody put their foot in their back and strangled him, which is kind of inconvenient. Cool stuff. And we really died in 1987. People don't realize that World War II never ended for a long time. What actually happened was that the powers that conquered Germany could not agree on an ending to it. And so it was it was when the Berlin Wall fell, that when Germany was reunified, that we could actually end World War II. Up until that point, there was just sort of an armistice. We defeated Germany and nobody could agree on how the thing would end. So technically the war continued for 45 years. So it's a whole bunch of really cool stuff. The guy says it's among the least understood, most covered up chapters of the war. It's still classified as top secret. And Churchill at the time claimed that there were nothing more than peace in Britain in exchange for a free hand for Germany to do what they wanted to. But I don't think it really holds up to what we know. They also claimed that Hess was a nut and crazy. That's the reason he got out. That doesn't hold up so well. People wonder how he could have flown a plane in wartime from the middle of Germany to the middle of England without being shot down by his own people or the English forces. There's a lot of stuff that just doesn't add up about this story. So if you're interested in taking a deep dive in sort of mysteries of history, conspiracy version, this is a really, really cool story to dive down into. I'd love to see more work done on this. Next story. Demystifying recursive zero-knowledge proofs. And that's just all the excitement you would expect from a story titled this. I won't dive on this because I was really hoping that somebody else would be here I could talk to about. This is basically about the ways blockchain and different cryptocurrency protocols work. Zero-knowledge proofs are what it's all about, my friend. If you're interested in doing some crypto studying, this is a great, great explainer text. Next. Vue.js has been selected as Wikimedia Foundation's future JavaScript framework. I love this. And the reason I love this is because I chose Vue.js years ago as my next framework. And it makes me happy inside to know that, yet again, I have proven right. After all, that's what really reading the newspaper and reading news is all about, is being self-assured that whatever you thought beforehand is actually true. This is good stuff. I looked at React, looked at Angular. I looked at a bunch of stuff. I used, of course, jQuery 15 years ago, back when it first came out, and it was fun stuff. I saw most of that kind of being rolled into the DOM. I guess I would still use jQuery if I needed it. I'm not really sure. Most of the stuff I use jQuery for is now built into the browser. So when it came time to do more component-based, larger-scale stuff, I looked at everything I saw. And Vue.js just had the magic happening for me. And I tell you why. I kept reading people who said, you know, I have a hard time scaling these other frameworks up to large sites, whereas Vue keeps everything kind of in one spot where I can reuse it. And I found that as well. When I wrote several sites with Vue, I was able to use inheritance. I had some wonderful component technology work. I did this static site blog. I wasn't tied into a back-end compile build cycle with WebKit, Webpack. It was a thing of beauty. I really loved it. And then as I continued to use it, I realized that Vue was actually tracking into sort of merging into the DOM with the web components and all this stuff. So just like jQuery kind of got melded into the system because it was so good, this is the same thing happened in Vue. The stuff I used in Vue, you know, 5 or 10 years when it first came out, is now actually part of the HTML spec itself, and Vue has moved on since then. Vue has also listening to a couple of presentations by the people who made it. They also try to stay as simple as possible, expandable. It's funny. I was getting ready to tweet this morning. You can listen to people present about different technologies, and some of them, they just get it. I've seen some slick people. I've seen them demo some slick stuff. But I've also seen people that I listen to, I'm like, okay, yeah, I don't really care whether this is cool or not. This person actually gets it. They understand how to code large systems, and so I can trust myself that they're not going to make stupid decisions for me. This was good. So Wikimedia is going to be using Vue. Good for them. Rock on, dudes. I'd like to write something else with Vue. I'm really been in search of a project for a few months now, so maybe I'll pick Vue back up and do something. I don't know. We'll see. Next story. Why extraterrestrial life may not seem entirely alien. Here's the guy who wrote the article with his dog. I'm assuming this is dog, and actually it's not an alien, and he's the alien's pet, which, if true, would be even more cool. So there's a lot of reasons and arguments you can make that aliens are going to kind of look sort of the same. Bipedalism seems to be associated with a faster movement, longer-term movement. There's symmetry of the body, thoracic cavity. There's some things, the eye, for instance, we find like the eye being re-evolved over and over again on the planet. There's a thing called convergent evolution, which says that given initial environmental conditions, no matter where you start, you kind of end up in the same spot. And so this is sort of an extended version of that. Like we know that, or we think we know, that wherever an alien species would be, there would be gravity, there'd be some sort of atmosphere fluid, and a source of radiation, heat or light. And based on these conditions, we can look around our own planet and see that these things always emerge the same way from evolution, based on convergent evolution. So, yeah, okay, I get it. If aliens show up and they all look like people with bumps on their head, like Star Trek shows them, it's going to really suck, because for one thing, how are they going to buy hats? You're trying to buy a hat for a Klingon? It's like you can maybe a stocking hat, maybe, but some of those bumps you can't hide with a hat. The next article is sort of more of an explainer, dive deep on this. This came a day or two after this first one. Alien Dreams, the surprisingly long history of speculation about extraterrestrials. You would think that we would just be speculating about aliens over the last, 30, 40 years. Nope, it goes back hundreds of years. Matter of fact, this guy begins with the Cherokee, the Native American Cherokee. And it's another cool, really cool deep dive on, what we thought aliens were for many, many years. And something I think people don't realize, I feel this kind of speculation. Well, if aliens show up, that would destroy religion. No, not yet. We think of aliens as being these beings from another planet with mind powers or whatever we think of, right? But what we forget is until we really met everybody else on the planet, everybody was aliens. So when Columbus steps off the New World, he had no concept of what to expect. It could have been flying monkeys. It could have been Klingons. It would have been the same to him. And it was the same to him. So we've been meeting aliens for a long, long time, and our religions have stayed the same, and our cultures have stayed the same. If anything, the lesson we learn from alien encounters is that powerful, advanced civilizations absorb weaker ones, whether they mean to or not. No matter how well-meaning they are, no matter what you do, it's just very difficult to show up in somebody's backyard with a cure to cancer, with the ability to fly and have mind powers, blah, 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 without completely destroying what their way of life is. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. It can be quite bad for some people, some native indigenous peoples, but you can also take advantage of it too. Would I really want to be living in a cave in England somewhere, averaging dying around age 30 from measles? No, I'm kind of happy the Romans showed up and conquered us and took us all slaves. And it probably really sucky at the time. But overall, in the long term, it worked out well. But don't be disillusioned about how these stories always work out. So this next one is the National Maritime Museum, the Royal Museum at Greenwich. had the Astronomy of the Year awards, and here I'm going to do a slideshow if it's going to work. See? Yes, here's the slideshow. So there's about seven of these. We have these are real pictures. This guy's camping out underneath the Milky Way. Look at this, how beautiful that is. That's just gorgeous. That is, and you can see, I've included links here. The file names have the author's name. This is Andrew, what's his face? Armstrong, maybe? Follow him on Twitter. He does some really cool stuff. Look at that. That's just amazing. Gorgeous, gorgeous work here. It's interesting that these pictures mostly involve Earth as well as sky, which is neat. This one kind of came up flat. Maybe it's flat. You know, I think it's the thing where the moon's nearing the horizon, so it kind of gets squished. Look at that. Whoa. You almost think that had to have been some sort of false color thing. That's very, very cool. Look how gorgeous that is. That's amazing. That's a moon bow. I think that's it. No, this is the last one. Is that cool or what? I would love to take pictures like that. That's astounding. So if you're interested, go to that site, take a look. I think you can vote for the astronomy picture, the astronomy photographer of the year. They're going to have the announcement on September 16th. And it'll be at the National Maritime Museum. Yeah, that's just cool, cool stuff. Next story. This is nerdy and history and medicine and a little bit of everything. 40 years ago, a woman famously survived being frozen solid. And it's she was in Minnesota. This man came across the body of his friend lying in the snow just a few meters from his door one morning. And the 19-year-old, her car had stalled, and it was minus 30 Celsius. And she, I guess, fell down, lost consciousness, and for 6 hours, she was in minus 30-degree weather. And when he picked her up, he said she was frozen solid as a board, which I would believe that, minus 30-degree weather for 6 hours. And heck, if she didn't live. So this is cool for a couple. You have a million diving reflex. You have all hypothermia. There's just an amazing amount of science and nerdery, along with a little bit of history here. One of the things I want to bring up that I haven't heard much about, you might want to keep an eye on, is, first of all, this kicked off this whole wave of actually lowering people's body temperature on purpose to do surgery, which they've been doing that now for 20 or 30 years. This was kind of the first example that, hey, wait a minute, we can actually do this in a reproducible manner. But they took this to the next step, and I think about 15 years ago, I read an article that said that the problem with dying, cell death, you know, once you stop breathing, is the gradual fall off of oxygen actually causes your cells to sort of explode and release all these bad chemicals that cause permanent damage. If you could just immediately drop the oxygen level to zero, the cells actually just hibernate, which is, they think, happened here. And so this guy, ER doc, they did a bunch of experiments, I think with pigs, some sort of animals, where they exsanguinated the bodies and dropped the temperature at the same time. Exsanguination, if you don't remember, is when they take all the blood out. So basically, they did these experiments where they just sucked the blood out of the pig immediately, replaced it with some sort of saline solution, dropped the temperature way down, and they were able to keep them up 3, 4, 5 hours at a basically dead point and bring them back. And once they did that, they're like, holy shit, we need to try this with people. And I think it was 5 or 10 years ago that they started doing a small study. I think it was an emergency department in D.C., the D.C., Philadelphia area, somewhere in the Northeast Corridor. And they were going to take gunshot victims, people who were going to die anyway, and do this same thing, exsanguinate them, freeze them. And then the idea being you would have like 4 or 5 hours to work on them while their systems just shut down. I mean, if you had 4 or 5 hours of operating time, it changes surgery completely. You could basically do head transplants. You could do all kinds of crazy shit, but I haven't heard anything about it. It's been many, many years. I need to follow up on this at some point. I saw a story about 2 years ago, that said it was still, they're still doing the study and it didn't say they had stopped. So maybe they're just waiting on the number of cases to come through, but this would be major, major medical advancement. This is, the path to stasis. You know, when you watch these different sci-fi shows, they put people to sleep for, you know, a year to go to Pluto or whatever. This is the tech that's going to take us to that. And before it takes us to Pluto, it's going to do a whole bunch of really cool medical stuff too. So, bears watching. Yet another super duper cool article. This guy posted a learning tree for artificial intelligence. And there's a links in the thing here. So if you've ever played a game, I've been playing Factorio since I broke my back. A lot of these games have technology trees. You do this, and then you do that, and you can do other things. And things are dependent on things about ahead of them. Well, this guy did a learning tree, a technology learning tree for AI. And it starts off with probability, math, and it goes to linear algebra and reinforcement learning, machine learning, deep learning. So yeah, if you're interested in anything about AI, you can go to this guy's learning tree, and each of the little nodes, if you click on it, boom, yeah, it zooms in. It's got several articles, including Khan Academy videos and all the more resources. So you can actually walk through the nodes, watching YouTube videos and other things to learn this stuff. I guess you can check off each node as you learn them, as if you were playing a game. That is really, really cool. It's cool because it's AI. It's cool because this site lets you do trees like that. This is called app.learny.me. And it's cool because the resources for this particular instance, this is amazing. This is some really cool app work. I want to play with this some more. I'm interested in learning AI more than I know. So, got to do this. Got to do this. Okay, so this next one. Okay. You've heard of flux capacitors, but have you heard of time crystals? Google may have achieved a scientific breakthrough. Time crystals. Or is this other, I have two articles on this because it's so bizarrely, amazingly, coolly nerdy. What was this? Oh, come on. Google's time crystals could be the greatest scientific achievement of our lifetimes. Yeah, this tickles my funny bone for a lot of reasons. First of all, what the living shit is a time crystal? Is it like a the Infinity Stone? So a time crystal, as I understand it, it's like a normal crystal, but it changes shape on a regular basis. So crystals are molecules or atoms stuck into a firm lattice, diamond, salt, things like that. A time crystal is a crystal that changes its crystalline nature on a regular basis. You could say pulses, reconfigures itself. It's movement without energy, which is the thing that blows everybody's mind. So it's like now I'm a star, now I'm a diamond, now I'm a star. Now, you know, so it vacillates back between various shapes on a regular basis. It is fixed in time and space. So it's wild. Immediately, I want to use it for quantum computing. I guess it would be sort of like a clock chip, perhaps, for quantum computing. But long-term, who the heck knows? I am with this guy. I am reticent to go completely and say it's achieving our lifetimes because I just don't know that much about the physics behind this. I do know that this is one of the more weird things I've seen, and I've seen a lot of weird things. If you have movement without energy, I mean, that's like perpetual motion stuff. So, yeah. It's a big screw you to Isaac Newton. Yeah, you need to follow up on this if you're interested. By reading this and just sort of pulling stuff out of my ass and guessing, 10, 20 years before we have hovercraft and transporters. So I think it's going to be a while before this actually becomes the discovery of our lifetime, such that, you know, it's obvious to folks. But who knows? The first objects to spontaneously break time translation symmetry, which is the user rule that a stable object will remain the same throughout time. So these objects are stable, but they also change because they're stable in a fourth dimension, not in a third one. Just it's the same as a two-dimensional object changes the vector as you trace around a square, even though the square itself stays the same. It's a new category of phases of matter. It's not a new phase of matter. It's a new category of phase of matter. Expand the definition of what a phase is. Yeah, can you simulate these crystals into larger structures that would then phase in and out of different configurations. That would be freaking wild, would it? Now it's a horse. Now it's a star. Now it's a turtle. Yeah, it definitely messes with your mind even more than quantum stuff does, and that's a lot already. We'll see. Cool stuff. Samsung's new DDR5 RAM chip could give you single-stick capacities of up to 768 gigabytes. One DDR stick, 768 gigabytes. This is what I need for Donkey Kong, okay? I need like four of these. This would be, holy fuck, would be 3 terabytes of RAM. 3 terabytes of RAM. So I guess for your SSD hard drive, you would need one of those 20 terabytes or maybe, I guess 100 terabytes would be about right. Yeah, this is freaking awesome. But in, for most of us, you know, you could just get like a 24 gig stick. I am quite sad that RAM has just stopped for maybe 10 years now. I really expected to be at about half a terabyte now inside my computer, and I'm not. And I'm not because of a lot of reasons, but I keep looking for notebooks with 32 or 64 gigabytes of RAM. It's tough to find. They just don't want to sell you that anymore. And then I keep running programming stuff on my notebook, eats up all my memory. I start paging out to the disk, and then I get sad and angry. So I hope, if nothing else, this sort of leads to notebooks standardizing around 32 or 64 gigs in the next few years, because, good God, people, it's, memory is cheap as hell. It's not going to cost you that much more to put some more memory in there. Yeah, that would be really cool. 768 gigabytes of RAM on a stick. And I'm serious. I would like to have a terabyte of RAM on a computer, because I could probably use that. If for nothing else, ray tracing, a bunch of other stuff. All right, I think this may be the last one. Bell Helicopter unveils a VTOL, vertical takeoff and landing aircraft. It's a concept that has fold-away rotors for jet speed flight. And if you're just seeing the hearing this on the podcast and can't see the picture, where is the picture? There's the picture. Basically, think of a V-22 Osprey. It's got, you know, V-22 has the wing that tilts up, and in the wings you have propellers. So it tilts up and you have a helicopter takes off, and the wing tilts down, and you fly forward. That's the way the Osprey works. Well, this is a very similar idea, except for once it tilts forward, the blades just fold back into the wing, and so it becomes a jet, because these are turbines anyway. So it transitions from a turboprop to just a jet plane, which kind of leads me to think you could, if I understand this correctly, have a vertical takeoff and landing supersonic jet transport, which would be freaking awesome if they ever made one of those. This fold-away rotor idea is most cool. I want to see more of this. And they say it's going to be the next generation of the Osprey if they do it. They call it a high-speed vertical takeoff and landing, or HSVTOL. So, yeah, very cool. And you got a little bit of a diagram and story on how it's going to work. Good stuff if you're interested. Yeah, some cool stories this week. That the time crystal is freaking awesome. The thing with the hibernation thing is awesome. Lose all your fat through your skin. I will never have to buy any of that sort of greasy hair gel they use in the 50s again. I just need the hair. But cool stuff. Let's do the little goodbye thing here. Ah, check out the new logo. Isn't that cool? That's right. It's been 40 minutes. 40 minutes of your time, but you could have been studying to be a doctor. You could have learned a new language this time. You could have learned math. You could have been to this learning tree thing where you picked up new AI skills. You might have even had time to freeze yourself and launch yourself to Pluto. But no, you're with us, and you're here with Nerd Roundup, and we're happy to have you. I'm Daniel Markham, and I will see you on the internet.